Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. This is your host, Alan. And we're going out to Ohio. This is via Skype. I have Ty and Eli here with me. They are getting ready to launch their podcast on conspiracy theory. They want you to look into the void and see what's real. They want to drag you out of the darkness. And they say, don't look too deep into the void, because if you do, the void will be looking right back at you. So Ty and Eli, what is going on around here?
What's up, man?
How's it going? Thanks for having us on, Alan.
So tell us a little bit about, like, what you want to do with the podcast.
Okay, so the name is going to be Illuminate the Void. We wanted something that would kind of reflect both the rabbit hole, you know, nature of it, what we want to explore, conspiracies, you know, far-reaching, ideas and conspiracies, essentially, and what we want to do with it, which is illuminate it, you know, go into every nook and cranny, kind of decipher between what is, you know, bad information, good information, and, you know, we're really excited. It's something that we're really interested in. The main topics are going to be conspiracies. We are going to probably dip into some music as well, and just anything else that we find fascinating. I think there could probably be a little bit of true crime in there, too.
Look out, though, because that's a hot topic for podcasting.
Yeah. So, you know, there's definitely a need to differentiate and not be just another true crime podcast, because, you know, just trying to do that, there's, you know, we got to have something that, you know, not everyone else has. And that's what we're going for. Me and Ty decided to start a podcast around conspiracies for a couple of reasons. One of them is that we have really good conversation around conspiracies. We're both into them, but we also don't exactly see eye to eye on everything. We almost always find some points of contention on each subject that we end up researching. And so we thought, you know, after having these conversations for as long as we have, we kind of realized it would be good for a podcast format to go back and forth, you know, go through information. We're both real big into rational thought. We're both real big
logical
into
logical guys.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the thing about it. And I don't want to take anything away from you introducing what you, what you're doing is, you know, there are most certainly two types of people, and there's logical and emotional. And so anytime we have like the Texas shooting breakout, we have everyone who is emotional, they immediately jump out of the gate. And then people who are logical, they wait for fact.
Yes.
And so it's really good to be logical, but it's also good to have those emotional people because we need them. We need each other, because if it was all logical, it would be all binary. It would be ones and zeros.
Right. Exactly. And if you strip, you know, if you completely strip it down to where there's no human emotion involved, who are you gonna get to? Who are you gonna have take you seriously? Because, you know, everyone has that emotional part to them. But But, you know, our thought is that, I mean, it's just, it's exactly what you said. When something like the Texas shooting happens, or any of the other dozens of shootings that have gone on in the past 20 years, you know, the media is essentially given, you know, given the outline for how to report it, how to spin it, you know, and it seems like the majority of people run with that.
Yeah, and that's a big thing for me with this podcast is I see with mainstream media, they will skim just the top layer of information, whereas me and Eli, we want to go to the bottom. We want to get everything.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you this is, you know, when I started Porch Talk, I had left Mobile, which is on the south side of the state of Alabama, and I moved back to my hometown, and I was having these conversations on the porch with my friends, and this was when I wanted music. I wanted to talk about the news. I wanted to talk about things that are cultural, kind of same story with y'all, but I was just seeing a big problem with the way that media and news was being presented, and it wasn't being represented honestly. They weren't giving you everything. They were just giving you a narrative. It was almost like the news became an opinion piece of not giving you the news, but telling you how to think.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I think a good example that kind of distills down what my and Ty's kind of shared notion of what information gathering should look like is that I remember when the shooting happened in New Zealand at the mosque, and I forget exactly how many people lost their lives. I know it was over 50, but you know there were two aspects of that I wanted to touch on to demonstrate how I think. The first one was that I intentionally, you know, and this might be controversial, both of these. But the first one is that I intentionally sought out the footage because, you know, it was a live streamed event. And I intentionally sought out the footage and I downloaded it because I'm very anti-censorship. And I believe that if, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, however horrific the event was, and of course it was, you know, here is a an unbiased look at the situation because, you know, the shooter filmed it while he was doing the shooting. So it can't be, I mean, it can be spun, you know, but it can't exactly be, made into a lie. You know, what you see is kind of what you get. And since I believe that the news is really compromised, media is really compromised in as far as how they deliver truth to us, it was important to me to make sure that video was saved because I knew that they were trying to censor it off, you know, off the internet. And I understand that, you know, that might be hard for some people to swallow, but you know, that for me was real big because, you know, once they take it away, once they censor that completely and remove it, they can say whatever they want about it. And you don't know if they're telling the truth or not, you know?
That's right.
And the news and media have been exposed enough times to be liars that I feel it is very important to find the most accurate, unbiased, unemotional information that as I can, you know, and from then kind of go on into the, you know, foray into the emotional logic and things like that. And the other thing about the New Zealand shooting I wanted to touch on was that, you know, the big thing around it at the time was that, you know, don't say his name and don't share his, you know, his manifesto and don't talk about how he had all these memes, you know, printed on the side of his gun, subscribe to PewDiePie, you know, shit like that. Well, you know, to me, that seems really relevant. You know, how could this guy who seemingly is treating this event like it's, you know, a video game or something to just laugh and joke about because, you know, his gun was completely covered in topical memes of the time. Of course, he live streamed the event, you know, and for me, you know, I feel like it's important to try my best to figure out why he did that, you know, because how are we ever going to stop people like this if we don't understand anything about how they think or how they believe? You know, and so the fact that they have these manifestos that they tend to write, you know, and it I think it really does them a disservice, because it, you know, it really lays bare the machinations of their mind. And, you know, and it usually boils down to, okay, they're just racist, you know, or whatever. It usually is pretty simple, but without having that manifesto, without having that evidence, without seeing it for myself and evaluating it, how am I supposed to know?
Yeah. Because I mean, you're literally taking the media for their word. And
yeah,
the unique thing about the media in the United States, apart from other countries in the world, was, it wasn't state propaganda until recently.
Right.
Right.
And so before we dig off any deeper, I want to do a little personal interviewing with y'all. How did y'all two meet? And like, I mean, what's going on around here? How'd y'all become boys?
I mean, Eli, do you care?
No, man. Go ahead. And, yeah, just give it. Go ahead and full speed ahead. You know, we didn't talk about this, but this is going to be fun, man. So go ahead.
They're naked. We actually met in a treatment center for drug and alcohol addiction. Me and Eli are actually recovering heroin addicts. We met, what, 6-7 months ago?
Yeah, six.
And immediately we just hit it off, man. We had so much in common. We were just on the same brain length. Like, mm-hmm. We just clicked. And it just went from there, you know, and it built into a huge friendship. And yeah, we just, there's so much in common. We get along so well, from music to conspiracies. We ain't afraid to hurt each other's feelings. We, you know,
I mean, it's good. It's good to have a guy that'll bust your balls. I mean, that's a good thing about the guy community, right?
Yeah, I'm always giving them shit. You know, I always probably a little too much, but you know,
yeah. We're Ty and I are both from Cincinnati. We live a little bit about an hour north of Cincinnati right now, but we're both from the same relatively small area of Cincinnati. We didn't know each other, but we ran with all the same people, you know, basically the drug abusing community. So we knew a lot of the same people, but somehow we never ended up meeting until we ended up in treatment back in like around January or somewhere around there. And you know, my experience growing up, you know, I'm 26. He just turned 30 not too long ago. And my experience growing up was largely marked by a real frustration that I was seemingly unable to find like-minded people like myself who were more interested in really getting the objective truth than just confirming their predispositions or their predilections for what the truth should be or they want it to be. It seems like a large portion of people that I have met in my life, you know, I mean, you've heard the phrase, don't confuse me with the facts. And it's kind of a cliche, but it's like, you know, a lot of people really think like that. And sure, a lot of people just, they seek out media, you know, designed to confirm what they already want to believe or what they already think is going on. Whereas I am someone who, you know, and I'm not trying to put myself above anybody or anything like that. I'm just simply outlining the difference between my thought process and others, which is that, you know, even if the truth hurts my feelings, essentially, I want to know the truth, you know. What's the point of feeling good or feeling secure in a truth if it's a lie, you know? So I'm a truth seeker above all else, and I've found that rare in other people I've ran across, particularly people in their 20s like me. And Ty was someone who was, you know, exactly the same as me in that regard. Now, the information we run across, a lot of the times we, you know, look into it differently, we comprehend it differently, we draw different conclusions, but that's some of the fun of discourse, you know, is that whole experience. But the the main part of it for me is that we're both searching for the truth. And so everything is in service to that.
Right on. Anything you'd like to add to that?
No, he summed it up perfectly, pretty much. So,
and so let me ask you this, is because like with all the mass shootings that we've had going on in the United States, if you take Buffalo or if you go to Texas right now, is I don't believe that we are addressing the problem. It's I believe it's not a gun problem. It's a cultural problem.
Yeah.
It's a home problem. I don't think we have fathers in the home anymore. I don't think that we have father figures. And so when you learn the backstory of the shooter, he should have been in an asylum somewhere.
Right. Right.
He shouldn't be taking part in the public.
No. And I had read somewhere too that the three most deadliest shootings in U.S. history occurred where the shooter was taking Prozac or Zoloft. The biggest issue is mental health, which gets a lot in this country. It has such a stigma around it. Elon?
We are not taking care of the young men in our country.
No, we're not.
We don't have enough role models. They are being left out in the cold. And then with everything going on in the culture today, and you see all this, it goes all the way back to Aurora, Colorado, back when the Batman, the Joker film was showing, and you had that wildcat jump in there and do all that. It goes back further than that. We are failing our American families at home.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, and I'm just going to speak about the shootings kind of in a generalized sense rather than any one specifically, but I'm talking about like basically from Columbine forward, right? So from the 90s forward, you know, for the first thing, I want to say is that it's a multifaceted issue, you know? And again, that's something that media tends to do is distill it down to one thing. Oh, it's just about Second Amendment rights. Oh, it's just about mental health, you know, whatever. When really all of it realistically plays into it, you know, to a degree. I would say the lesser problem is the problem of accessibility to guns. I think it's, you know, I'm generally pro Second Amendment. I believe that if you're an adult and you're mentally sound, you should be able to have a gun in this country. I think where the issue comes up there is that somehow these guys keep failing these fucking background checks or whatever it is. They keep failing these fail safes. The fail safes are not.
Most of these people are already on an FBI watch list, though.
Right.
Go ahead.
So we have these fancy fail safes that are put in place that theoretically should stop anybody who, you know, like Nicholas Cruz, you know, who is just a total wacko, you know, theoretically it shouldn't be a problem to say, no, you can't buy a fucking gun. But, you know, here it is, and it keeps happening over and over and over. And this is the only country where it happens as often as it does. You know, I mean, there's, you know.
That's not true. It goes, and, like, this is something statistically that we don't like to talk about. El Salvador. It happens more rapidly there. It also happens more rapidly in other third world countries that the United States doesn't like to compare itself to. For that reason,
I can see that. Now, to be clear, when I'm talking about mass shootings, I'm talking about however it's generally defined, and if it's I forget what the actual definition is, but it's like
it's,
you know,
it's plus four,
right. So plus four, correct. So if you're going by that definition, I know there's at least in the past couple of years there's been at least one for every day of the year. I don't know if that how that compares to El
Just
Salvador.
Go to Chicago on the weekend.
Right. Yeah. But still, you know, but again, the media doesn't latch on to those because that's a
it
largely
doesn't fit their narrative.
No.
Right. that's largely, and a lot of it is based in, you know, poverty stricken, predominantly African American neighborhoods. And
it's gangs.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's gang violence.
Right. Which, you know, I guess isn't worth reporting on or something. But I guess the only other thing, the only other, I didn't know that about El Salvador, though. So that's interesting.
I've been there twice, and I stayed in the capital in San Salvador. And the hotel we were staying in used to be a brothel. And mm-hmm. I remember just sitting outside on the patio smoking a cigar with some friends of mine. And in the distance, there was violence.
Yeah.
And we were there for 4 days, and every night it persisted. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, like, I don't know if it's still true, but El Salvador used to be the murder capital of the world. I haven't looked at the numbers lately, but the trend doesn't change.
Right.
No. I mean, that whole Central America, El Salvador, Guatemala, Mexico, that's all very cartel heavy. Sure. Very cartel heavy. So I think that a lot of the shootings will be contributed to cartel related business. And one of the biggest conspiracies, I believe, is that the cartels were put into power by the CIA to traffic drugs and weapons.
Well, I mean, look at the fentanyl crisis we have right now.
Exactly.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
That has killed so many people. I come from a very small town in Kennedy. Our little community is suffering, and I'm in a bigger town now. I'm in Columbus, Mississippi, and I live and work in Starkville, Mississippi. And it's there. It is heavily impacting the community, and it disparages rural areas in the South. It used to be meth. Now it's fentanyl. And now they're lacing even marijuana with fentanyl. And, like, I know a lot of crack, cocaine, all that. It's being laced with fentanyl. It's killing. Yeah. It's killing them.
Well, I mean, now with that, I don't think dealers are intentionally lacing them with fentanyl. I think it comes from cross-contamination. Because if they're dealing in fentanyl, chances are they're dealing in cocaine, marijuana, other drugs. And I'm just going to tell you, they're probably not changing drugs after they're doing a batch before they do another.
Fair.
You know, because I don't see the benefit to them killing off their customer base. That's just me.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah, it's largely based off of, you know, sloppiness, using the same scale to sell crack, to sell meth, to sell fentanyl. And people who don't use opioids, like, at all, you know, really almost any amount of fentanyl is enough to kill them, you know. So even if it's just a slight amount of residue, you know, there have been cases of paramedics and police officers overdosing from touching it, you know. So if you have someone who is going to smoke meth or smoke some crack, and the scale was contaminated with fentanyl before that, which I can tell you, you know, most dealers, you know, I've known, you know, hundreds of them, and I've been one myself, and generally there's no, you know, you don't really put in the effort to you know, clean the scale off real nicely with you know like Windex or something, you know what I mean? And it's like I don't know, man, but I mean, fentanyl is just wild, because even in opioid heavy users, opioid tolerant users like myself, you know, I've been using opioids for over 10 years. Fentanyl has caused me to overdose 6 times. It's also killed my last 2 girlfriends. It killed my ex-girlfriend Haley, who was 21. And then after that, it killed my ex-girlfriend Caitlin, who was 18. At the time. And so, you know, it's getting closer and closer to home, you know, for a long time. You know, I was in the drug communities for a long time. So of course, you know, I heard of tangential, you know, deaths that were, you know, just people that I knew or a friend of a friend. But, you know, it's gotten to the point where if you are a drug user, you know, in at least in Ohio, I can tell you for a fact, there is not anyone in Ohio who hasn't been addicted to opioids or who hasn't been addicted to meth, or who has, I mean, and has not known someone personally to die of an overdose. I mean, we all have now, you know.
It's an absolute epidemic up here.
Yeah.
And I can't speak for Alabama, so I am curious to hear. Up here, we're getting reports of a synthetic opioid that's being put in fentanyl. They're calling it Frankenstein. And it's, what did they say, 40 to 60 times more potent than fentanyl?
It's five to 40 times.
It's just, it's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it's, matter of fact, it was just about 2 or 3 weeks ago when I first started hearing about Frankenstein. And that actually came from friends of mine that I have in law enforcement. And so it is most certainly here. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it's like, I'm sure our experience, even though I'm from Alabama in the South and y'all in Ohio, I believe our high school experience was exactly the same in that regard. That was first exposure. Whether it was being, out at the party and it was there, or you had a buddy who was an athlete who got hurt and you got to try some of his opioids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's really what burns me the most up about this, man, is that that's how, you know, for me, just to stereotype myself a little bit, you know, I'm a younger white suburban kid, right? My family by no means is wealthy, but I lived in a nice.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Nicer area of town, you know what I'm I like. My point is, I didn't grow up around gang violence. I didn't grow up around drug dealers. I didn't grow up with drug addicts for parents. You know, my parents aren't even divorced, for God's sake. My parents are still married. You know, that's rare enough. And yet,
and yet
here I am, over 10 years deep into a heroin addiction. It's like, how'd it happen? Well, I'll tell you how it happened. I was 16 years old. I got my wisdom teeth out, and they prescribed me Norco, which is another brand of
Lortab.
Vicodin, Lortab, same thing. It's like access to those pharmaceutical opioids that they, you know, the first Purdue and the Sackler family just pushed them like crazy. And, you know, starting in the 90s, they just told everyone, they told the doctors that it's not addictive. This Oxycontin stuff, this insanely, insanely powerful opioid is non-addictive, right? So the doctors they give kickbacks to the doctors for prescribing them, you know, and obviously there's whole documentaries on that you can go look up to confirm all this. But so they get an entire generation essentially hooked on Oxycontin. And then by the time I was growing up, which I'm talking around the early 2010s, 2010, 2011, 2012, at that point, they're still kind of giving opioids out like candy. And so just for a simple wisdom tooth extraction, you know, I got something like 30 Norco, which is, you know, we're not at all, you know, called for. And so my exposure to that sent me obviously on this journey where now I'm at the point where I've lost girlfriends from fentanyl overdoses. I've overdosed on fentanyl 6 times. I've gotten felonies. I've done time and, you know, all countless times I've been to jail, you know? And so, but my point is like, So they started out a whole generation of us on this, right? Where we felt the after effects of what Purdue and the Sackler family did, which was get a whole bunch of people hooked on these things, right? Completely lie through their teeth, you know? And this is a
a respected pharmaceutical company, a respected billionaire family, lie through their teeth about what these things are going to do to you. And then the government decided to react by just cutting everything off. And then all of a sudden, China, you know, figured out, oh, there's a huge demand for opioids. The demand for opioids, contrary to what the U.S. government seems to think, does not dissipate if you take away pharmaceutical opioids. You know, there's still synthetic ones, you know. So
here's the thing, Eli, and this is the timeline that I always bring up to people. It's one of the theories that I almost 100% believe. Is that in the 90s, push pharmaceutical painkillers to anybody and everybody. You got a headache, here's Percocet, right? All the way up into the early 2000s, then we go to war in Iraq, right? And then all of a sudden, we're at war with Afghanistan, and nobody could figure out really any reason why we were there. Reports are coming out that we're guarding poppy fields.
Which we were.
It's a cash crop. Somehow that might make a little bit of sense. Immediately following that, there is a complete heroin epidemic in the United States.
Correct. That's
a coincidence.
Check this out. I don't know how much y'all pay attention. I don't know if y'all have brothers or sisters or just friends with kids now. And what we're dealing with now is we have an Adderall epidemic.
Yeah.
We have people who are literally taking amphetamine, and everyone that is 18 years or younger is like, oh, he's got ADHD.
Yeah, it's young boys mainly too, and it's young boys are rowdy and rambunctious. That's just
they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you know.
Give them a medication that is one molecule away from methamphetamine, and I don't think parents are even aware of that. When they start giving it to their kids.
We've all seen the meme, right? Where you take like the mask off Adderall or Ritalin and it's like methamphetamine. It's like, let's just put that back on.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Alan, I don't know if you were aware of this, but methamphetamine is actually still prescribed as an ADHD medication. It's called Desoxyn, DESOXYN. And it is literally it's not amphetamine or dextroamphetamine salts like Adderall. It's not methylphenidate like Ritalin. It is methamphetamine. That is now, granted, it's not used much anymore, obviously, especially because of the stigma against meth. But, you know, it is a pharmaceutical drug. Desoxyn is a pharmaceutical methamphetamine drug, you know. Diamorphine.
They still have cocaine with nasal surgery.
They still use fentanyl for anesthetic.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, I have a friend of mine. His father is in his late 60s, and he didn't understand this, but he has a fentanyl patch, and then they gave him a nasal inhaler in case he ODs.
Oh, my God.
Narcan.
Yes. And he didn't understand, and so we were out at lunch one day, and he was like showing us the patch. And I was like, don't show a lot of people that.
Yeah.
Because if someone finds out that you have that,
they will break into your house and they will rob you.
Yes.
That's right. And he was like, I don't understand the spray. Like, do I use it? I was like, if you use it, it's going to kill the pain medication for your cancer. Yeah. That is to be used like if you're in dire straits.
And let me tell you something interesting about that, Alan. If he needs that nasal inhaler, he'll never get the chance to use it. And I say this as someone who's overdosed 6 times. You don't have time to realize you're overdosing, man. You don't.
Gosh.
I've done it 6 times. I can tell you, there is no case of ODing that has ever happened to me or that I've ever seen happen to anyone else.
Let me fix myself.
Yeah.
They realized they were getting too high, because that's what you would think if you're not a drug user or you're drug naive, is that, oh, I'll feel my breath start to slow down. I'll feel my heartbeat start to slow down. I'll start to feel really sleepy. Mm-hmm. I'll know somehow something's wrong. No. Right. Again, it's happened to me. I've done it 6 times, man. You do not get the chance to save yourself. If there is no one around you, you will die. You will. You will not. The only reason to for him to have that inhaler is so that hopefully whoever
someone's around
is right. That's the only way. I mean, so I hope they didn't explain to him how to use it on himself, because he's never going to get the opportunity to ever.
Dude, they explained it so poorly. He thought he used it for a pain additive, and I was like, no, that'll kill the pain.
Oh, right. That'll put
you'll be in pain. Yeah.
That'll put him in severe withdrawal. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, this the whole medical pharmaceuticals, it's out of line.
It is outrageous, man.
It's strict regulation.
And they are making hand over fist.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and then you got these SSRIs, and I'm on an SSRI. I'm on Zoloft. You know, I've been on Zoloft for a long time. It's prescribed to me for anxiety and depression. It seems to help pretty well. But, you know, it was only a couple years ago that I started to realize how young most of these drugs are, man. Most of these drugs only started to get, you know, put out there in the 90s. So no one even knows what these do to you over multiple decades. No one.
Now seeing the long-term effects coming out is what's...
Yeah. They don't bother checking that out first.
It's like you are literally a statistic.
Yes, in several different ways.
And you'll be ill-reported, so I believe like what we're talking about right now is extremely important for the public to hear.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know...
And thank you for being so open about it.
Well, yeah, sure, because, you know, I'm very passionate about it. I mean, Ty and I's regular jobs, we both work at a treatment center. We're residential assistants at a treatment center, so that's our job. So we both care very deeply about, because it's such a tragic thing to happen, man. And the thing about statistics is that I'm just a number one, right? And the next guy over here, that's a number one. And the other guy over here, that's a number one. They both have stories that are just as long and just as detailed and just as emotional and just as significant as I do. But they're never going to get the chance to tell those stories because they either already died from an overdose or they're in prison. You know, I mean, it's
meant so. We don't have universal health care like we should. So a lot of addicts struggle and are homeless because they can't get into treatment. They don't have health care available to them.
Okay. Okay. One thing I'll say about that is one thing that it's more of a libertarian stance. If you haven't heard of it, it's called crowd health. It's now going in, like if you're homeless, you obviously won't be able, but you opt in with $500.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then anything under $2,000, you pay out of pocket. But anything over that, it's crowdfunded with everyone who is a member of CrowdHealth. So there are libertarian-minded groups in healthcare who are going outside of health insurance, who are trying to get healthcare to people, and there are doctors who are so sick of how the pharmaceutical and the drug companies are treating the way that they have to treat patients, because insurance and all that, it's all a drag.
Yeah.
They're taking everyone for what it's worth. And so like, I love CrowdHealth. It's crowdfunded, but like they have, you can't be overweight. You can't be a smoker.
Right.
And then like, $500 down and you pay monthly dues, and like they build up a big pot. And let's just say you get diagnosed with cancer. Well, you're there. And so everyone in that group is going to pull together to pay for your bill.
And that's called Crowd Health?
It's called Crowd Health.
Definitely. I mean,
let me pull it up right now. I'll give you some more information. Go ahead.
All I was going to say was that really could only work with those exclusionary factors of, oh, if you're a smoker or if you're overweight, because obviously, you know, first of all, being a smoker or being overweight is to some extent, it is
Crowd Health.
Crowd Health.
Crowdhealth.org.
Oh, okay. I mean, well, like, for example, I'm a smoker, right? So for me to take advantage of a crowdsourcing site like that when, you know, when I, it's been proven, you know, I know full well what the eventual complications of smoking are, you know, that wouldn't really work, you know. So I really appreciate the idea, and I like how they have, you know, I mean, you can't just give it to anybody, you know, because especially if you're crowdsourcing it, you know, most people in that group are not rich, you know, they're not wealthy.
Yeah.
So it only works if it's not abused, you know.
That's right.
And yeah. So
and I mean, that just goes to everything. Like, you know, I'm a smoker too, and I'm trying to quit. Like, I'm using the fume from Canada to help edge my cravings.
Right.
And it's like a steampunk, like, little wood pipe that you hit. It's got like a, it just has like fibers in there that, like, I like menthol cigarettes. And so I have a little fiber in there. I hit it. It's called Conquer. If you go to Fume and look at their, website, and you'll hit that, and it'll give you everything a menthol cigarette gives you.
Wow. Really?
It really does get it done, but like, it's all natural. It doesn't have nicotine. It's nothing. Like, when you inhale, you're not exhaling anything. There's nothing there. You're just getting, like, you have that hand motion because you got this steampunk little pipe.
Yeah.
You can, like, when you go out to a party. Yeah. I mean, it's fun. You know, it's like, you can twiddle it on your fingers or whatever. Right. And everybody's like, oh, what is that? And it's like, I'm trying to quit smoking, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's a lot more glamorous than nicotine gum or nicotine patches, man. You know?
Well, I mean, I think those nicotine gum and nicotine patches are actually more damaging. And what I've found from, like, just people I know who've done them, it's actually done a whole lot more harm than good.
Oh, really?
Like,
in what way?
Too much nicotine.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they went back to cigarettes, and like, they were smoking twice as much.
Yeah. She gets used to that high amount of nicotine.
And then they started smoking with that patch on because they were trying to get some kind of a new high.
Right.
I've tried both the gum and the patches, and they both failed for the same reasons. And that is that, one, there's no, you know, there's some kind of an oral fixation, as Freud described it, you know, when it comes to smoking a cigarette, putting it in your mouth, taking a drag, putting it away. The patch and the gum don't do that. The gum theoretically does that, but it doesn't for me, you know, so it failed in that aspect. And then the other aspect, you know, that's half of the battle, is just the movement and the ritual of smoking a cigarette, not the actual nicotine itself. Of course, that's a big part of it. But like you said, you know,
it's the hand motions.
Yeah.
Just step away from the world for 3 to 4 minutes, smoking the ritual and just getting away from everything. I think that I am most addicted to.
Especially because so many jobs that you can only go on a break if you're a smoker.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Which is nuts. It's nuts, man. So,
guys, I'll hit a level with y'all. I don't care if we hit a conspiracy. I think we just. I think we just did a good thing.
Yeah, we just went on a tangent there. But
the thing I really like about this is that, you know, I think this is not that we don't have the capacity, obviously, to really do a deep dive on stuff, because we totally do. But I think this is kind of serves as a good introduction of sort of our dynamic, the way that we approach things, and also just the assortment of topics that we might cover, you know, because any and all of those are things that we're really informed on and that we would be liable to talk about. So
my biggest hope for our podcast is, even if it's a small, like, 5 or 6 people that listen to us, as long as they give us, like, new topics to research, you know. I love learning new ideas, new things. I love researching and investigating, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind going over topics and ideas I already know about, but I really enjoy finding new things.
I'm gonna tell you this is like, dude, I'm telling you, like, we Porch Talk is gonna be 4 years old in August. And
oh wow,
I love our audience because like they send me articles, they send me parodies, they send me music videos, they send me things to, they send me songs to make fun of me. I love it. It's a great audience, right? But like they really keep you on your toes, and so man, the audience is really where it's at,
right?
So, like, I don't really sense a need to go any further. I just want to invite y'all on again so we can actually talk about what we plan to talk about.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But I want to walk this thing out of the door, and I have three questions.
Awesome.
So question number one is, tell everyone in the audience where they can find y'all. Social media, whether you plug the podcast on Twitter, or what does that look like?
Twitter.
And the YouTube channel.
We have a YouTube channel. We just put them up about a week and a half ago. Our Twitter handle is Duo of the Void. And that's basically, at this moment, our main platform that you can reach us at.
And that's how we found each other.
Yeah. And I'm going to be setting a Facebook page hopefully this week when I find time.
Right on. All right. Question number two is, what are the, and we've kind of already covered it, but what are the expectations, like, as far as content? How much content are y'all going to put out? Is it going to be once a week, twice a week, once a month? What are y'all looking at?
We've kind of discussed possibly doing two a week, work permitting, but it's definitely for sure at least one. And
we are starting at once per week, correct? Yeah. And that once per week, I would imagine anywhere between the hour to 2 hour mark, more likely right around the 90 minute mark.
And number three is, what was your favorite part about this interview?
Go ahead, Ty.
I would say, honestly, getting to know you more, being able to reach out, you know, to somebody who is three or four states away, you know, someone we have similarities with, the same interests, you know, just being able to chit chat, shoot the breeze, and just, you know, enjoy an hour of our time, get a break from the whole crazy world that's going on right now, you know.
I think, and just for me, I think probably my favorite aspect of it was, for one thing, really just the start of what I think is going to be a really rich relationship. You know, I really enjoy talking with you, Alan, and really just talking about anything. You know, we were able to go back and forth on several topics. It's always real satisfying just to find someone that you can conversate with like that. And then the other thing that I really liked was that I've never actually had the experience of putting out content or having a presence on social media. And so this kind of gave me a feel for what it's like to be speaking to an audience, and what I can improve on, you know, what I can amplify, what I can minimize, how I can improve. So I think as far as that goes, it was very, very, very helpful.
Well, guys, I anticipate having y'all on immediately. I'm talking like Tuesday next week or something like that.
Yeah.
And we'll actually get into the topics now that we all know each other. All the boys and girls of Porch Talk know you now, so we can dig back in. This has been a great episode. And, guys, you're welcome. Thank y'all so much.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Have you seen your mother, baby, standing in the shadows with a look of indecision on her face? Have you ever wondered how she looked when she was younger and decisions were the things she had to make? Did you see your father, baby, there beside your mother, laughing with his arm around your waist?
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.